Please welcome Dean Thompson.
Lions and tigers and bears. I knew I could count on you. What is it about predators that people are so enamored about? People like predators. You know, is it their coloration? Is it how they look, their intense stare, their sleek beauty, their deadly grace? What is it about predators we like? You know, I mean, we have stuffed bears, stuffed tigers. People wear t-shirts emblazoned with full color illustrations of wolf faces or lion faces. One of the things I think people like about predators is their perceived fierceness and their toughness. That's why we use them for mascots for our teams or symbols for our nation. But there's also a dark side to predators, because predators deal in death. And when they make their hunts and they make their kills and they dispatch their prey, a lot of times it's not very pretty. And there's some predators, when they interact with other members of their own species, sometimes it can be rather disturbing. Maybe what it is about predators that we like is that they exemplify perfectly what it means to survive by any means. There is a dark side to predators, but there is also a dark side to the people who work with predators. I know, I worked with birds of prey for about 4 or 5 years, and I know other biologists that work with predators, and when we watch these animals for extended periods, when we watch them go on their hunts and make their kills, and we examine prey remains, it can't help but kind of shape your outlook on life. And one of the things that I came to the conclusion of is that everything, every living thing is potential food for something else. That's just, you know, that's just the way it is. And when I was working with birds of prey, I quickly realized there was no such thing as Purina Hawk Chow, okay, and neat little nuggets. No, these little nuggets were warm, living, breathing, furry, or feathered little items that we had to feed to the birds. Now, luckily for us, we were always provided with frozen a quail or rabbits or something that we would feed the falcons or the hawks. But there were times that we would run out of food, and then it was up to us to find food by any means to feed our falcons or hawks. Otherwise, they would starve to death. And I told a while back about an incident down in Yuma where we were dealing with pigeons, but there was another release site up in the Sierra Nevada where we were releasing falcons, and we ran out of frozen Coturnix quail to feed to the falcons. And so arrangements were made for myself and my field partner at the time, Bruce, to go down to a little tiny town called Minkler, right outside of Fresno, to pick up some frozen quail. And when we arrived at this poultry farm, we were greeted gruffly by this big, hairy man with a bushy beard, dressed in sweat-stained overalls and a battered straw hat. Looked like they had been run over by a truck several times. And he escorted us to the back of the property where there was this huge cage with a tin roof on it where there were hundreds of quail in it. And he pointed at the cage and said, "Well, there they are. My son will help you cage them up and catch them and cage them up. You can take them." And I turned to the man and I said, "Excuse me, sir, but I was under the impression that we were supposed to pick up a box of frozen quail." And the man kind of scowled at me like I was a bug or something. He said, "Son, my goddamn freezer broke a while back. I'm still waiting for them bastards to ship us parts. If you want frozen quail, freeze them yourself." And he turned and walked away. He was done with us. Now, Bruce and I could tell it was going to be another hot day in the Central Valley, triple digits. And so we didn't waste any time, and we crawled inside that tin roof coop with all the quail to start catching the quail. And as the temperature climbed rapidly that day, the sun's enthusiasm for helping us dropped. But Bruce and I worked faster because we wanted out of there, grabbing quail, sticking them in the cage, grabbing quail, sticking them in the cage. Feathers and down were now sticking to the sweat, streaming down our face. We're grabbing quail, sticking them in the cage. They're starting to panic now, flapping around, scurrying around. There's dust all over the place. Our nostrils felt like they were coated with dust and powdered quail shit. And we just wanted out of there, right? And so finally we got all the quail, 150 of them, packed up into two cages. And we put those cages on the bed that I usually slept in inside my 72 Dodge Tradesman 200 conversion van. And we put them on the bed there. And the quail were all wobbly and stressed and hot from their efforts of trying to elude us. And we were hot and stressed. And it was time for all of us to just get out of the valley and find somewhere cool. And it was quite a scene, our escape from the midday heat in the valley there. I mean, My van had no air conditioning, so we had all the windows and all the vents up there as we bolted up that twisty mountain road towards Kings Canyon. There's feathers floating around inside the van, but quickly getting zipped out the window into our wake as we fled through the foothills trying to find coolness in the mountains. The quail were all goggled-eyed and panting, and Bruce had a spray bottle. He kept wetting the birds down so they wouldn't overheat. I mean, we just had to keep these birds alive so we could kill them later. It made little sense, but we pressed on. And finally, we got to the national park, and we pulled into the service yard where one of the nearby buildings had a freezer that we would freeze the quail with. And when I turned the engine off, I turned and I looked at Bruce. And Bruce had this odd look on his face, and I said, "What?" Knowing full well the answer. And he said, "How are we supposed to kill 150 quail?" A valid question, you know? And it turns out it's a question both of us had come and kind of been dancing around in our brains the whole way up, not really wanting to face it. Kind of like a dog turd in the grass that you ignore until you're finally forced to clean it up, you know what I mean? And neither one of us were really strangers to killing. We had hunted and killed individual animals before, but neither of us had ever done killing on a scale like this. And we had to kill 150 quail quickly, humanely, bloodlessly, without poisons, and freeze them for food for falcons. Okay, now I had seen falconers take pigeons and quail and with their thumb and forefingers just pop their neck really, really, really quickly. And it takes a deft touch, and it's a skill that both Bruce and I realized we lacked. And so I turned to our Hacksite manual for advice. And our Hacksite manual was entitled Hacking, A Method for Releasing Peregrine Falcons and Other Birds of Prey. And under the feeding section, there was a line. It said, although there are a variety of ways to dispatch food animals for falcons and other birds of prey, one of the most effective is to propel the animal against a stationary object, most often the ground. So there you had it. There was our solution. And as gruesome as it sounds, it really is one of the most effective ways to kill a bird. I mean, think about it. We've all experienced it, sitting there in our snug little homes, reading our book, watching TV, when all of a sudden, bam, we're jolted alert by this impact on the window, and there's this dusty outline of feathers right there, maybe a few feathers stuck to the glass by a smear of blood, and below the windows, there's this crumpled heap of feathers, which was formerly a bird, thinking it was pretty slick, having found this new little gap through the bushes to fly through. Well, with our solution in sight, the killing began. And after a slow start, we became quite efficient at it. Reach in, grab a bird, wind up, and hurl the poor thing to the ground. And after we'd done about 20 or so birds, I looked over at the cages, and I didn't like what I saw. All the other birds were pressed against the far wall of the cage, eyeing us suspiciously. And I told Bruce, I said, "Bruce, we need to move those cages away from the killing grounds, if not for the bird's sake, for mine." And so we moved the cages and we continued on with our grim task. When all of a sudden I hear this high, shrill voice saying, "Oh my God!" And I look over and there's Jenny, our young intern that we had hired to help us with the release site. And her eyes are just wide in horror as she's staring at the scene before her. Scattered around the ground are probably 60 or so dead quail with their limbs akimbo, feathers still drifting in the still mountain air. Both of us are holding a struggling bird in our hand. And now Jenny's voice is kind of laced with panic and she's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And without missing a beat, Bruce looks at her, winds up, hurls a bird to the ground, and says, "We're making hawk food. Want to help?" Jenny's face flushes red, and she's like, "I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat meat, and I don't participate in the killing of animals." And so I hand the bird I have to Bruce, and I walk over to Jenny, and I say, "That's okay. That's all right. You don't have to help, but you need to understand something. The falcons are not vegetarians. They need to eat meat. And when you work with carnivores, Jenny, animals are going to die." And over my shoulder, I hear Bruce say, "Oh, but you can't help. This is hot work. Think you could get us some beer?" And Jenny just scowls at us, and she's like, "You're disgusting." and she spun on her heels and walked away. Now, to Jenny's credit, she returned later with some beer, and she also expressed her gratitude to us that we took care of this messy task instead of her. I mean, after all, it had to be done, and somebody had to do it. And when I look back on my time working with predators, I really do appreciate the perspective it's given me on life and on death. I mean, all life lives by the same rules. Survive by any means. Eat and be eaten. Whether it's a plant being eaten by an herbivore, or that herbivore being devoured by a predator, or everyone's final consumption by maggots and bacteria. And I know there's people out there thinking to themselves, that is a really dark way to look at things, Dean. I don't see it that way. I think it's beautiful in its simplicity and its cyclic nature. And it makes me feel part of the living world. And it makes me feel connected to all my four-legged and feathered and furred and even scaled brothers and sisters. And it's kind of a good reminder to enjoy every moment on this beautiful earth. Thank you.